After nearly 2 years of heated debate over Bloomington's stance on contact with federal immigration agents, the police department has quietly adopted roughly the same policy used by the town of Normal. Immigration activists had feared Immigration and Customs Enforcement would be getting police help rounding up undocumented immigrants. In this interview with GLT's Eric Stock, Police Chief Clay Wheeler says the new policy means contact with ICE will rarely be an issue, and then only in criminal matters.
It was something that the mayor had put out his recommendation to us of having a policy that for something that did not pass council and did not have the full support of council. Basically, what we have done is it's the practice within the department of how to address that, and we follow the Trust Act and the information provided by the Illinois Attorney General's office and how to we should address the issues brought through in the Trust Act.
So can you say under what circumstance your officers will interact with immigration agents?
In my 28-year history, it's very, very seldom. And definitely on a routine basis for a police officer on the street, it's probably something that doesn't even happen during their career. It's hard. It's a very general question to ask. For the most part, it's something that doesn't really occur at all. If there were to be something that immigration would ask for, if they were to go look for violent offenders and ask for our help or something, it'd have to be something that we at a command level would make a decision on based upon the needs of the community. No different, really, than the policy in effect over at Normal as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. They had adopted a policy shortly before this was handled here in Bloomington. So was there an effort to have parity between the two departments to avoid any confusion from the public standpoint?
Yes, and that's basically what we're doing is Normal has a policy of with if an immigration issue comes up, if an ICE agent, so to speak, comes and asks for assistance, that has to be gone through supervisors, the chief's designee, which at Normal is the lieutenants, and here as well. And we've given that direction to our command staff as well. And really, for anything that doesn't need an immediate decision right that then, as far as something that's occurring on the street, it's something that goes through my office and gets documented.
For something that seems to come up so rarely, according to what you've described as your interactions over all your time here, did everybody make too big a deal about this? This was an ongoing issue for a year or more.
It's the eye of the beholder. If you're somebody that has those concerns, because that's the part of the community that you live in or you are part of, I can understand how it was a concern, because there was the paranoia or thought that there was much more going on, and during different parts of the country there was. It necessarily didn't translate to here. So it's a very important issue to some people. We understand that. And that's, I think, why Illinois came out with the Trust Act and reminded police officers that most of immigration is a civil matter, not a criminal matter for the law enforcement officers to deal with. So that's the direction the guy on the street has, is it's a criminal thing. It's not a criminal thing. It's a civil item that's not their purview, not for them.
The city's Public Safety and Community Relations Board formed a year ago to help the city address concerns about alleged mistreatment by officers and specifically how the department handles those complaints. Now, the department went the first year without any complaints that went to the PSCRB. The first one was filed just a few weeks ago, and by that we are referencing the department's handling of the complaints, not the initial complaints themselves. Do you feel creating this commission has changed the public's view of officers, and has it changed how officers interact with the public in any way?
I suppose it would for some of the citizens. I haven't really talked to anybody that's told me that, so I don't know firsthand. I have heard some people say that maybe the fact that there's a board and somebody looking at nature of complaints has changed the way the officers have done their job. You know, me as the leader of this organization, I support anything where our officers say, you know what, I need to do the right thing and do things the right way. So if they feel that a little bit and have changed anything, I don't see that they've changed anything, but if that's a possibility, it certainly doesn't hurt that somebody believes that doing the right thing is a good idea. I think my staff, they do the right thing because that's why they hired on here, and that's what we tell them to do, is to try to do the right thing by people because that's what they believe in and why they're police officers.
And this is Sound Ideas. I'm Eric Stock with Bloomington Police Chief Clay Wheeler. 2018 was the deadliest year in Bloomington-Normal in about three decades for gun violence. Man, there were several dozen incidents of armed violence as well. Often violence begets more violence because of the need for retaliation and for rivals to feel the need to police themselves. How much of this do you believe is part of a trend, or was 2018 an outlier year?
We're certainly hoping it's an outlier. When you look at the overall statistics in regards to how many shootings there have been, the rate of homicides is an outlier because the rate of shootings has actually decreased or almost stayed stable. So that makes us hopeful that it is an outlier. Certainly it's something you don't want to just take for granted, though. Kind of the role that we take here at the Bloomington Police Department, though, is a serious crime like this, we go all hands on deck. And we put every resource that we have at our disposal in trying to solve those crimes to help the victims and the families of the victims, and also just the accountability for who's responsible for it and the message to the community that if you're going to do those type of things here, you're going to be held accountable.
Can you say whether there are similarities that police have noticed in these shootings that point to any trends in terms of, say, source of weapons, the people involved, or circumstances that may have led to the violence, or do you see them all as isolated?
I think that's something we're going to want to talk more about after some of the cases go through trial, because I certainly don't want to say anything that's going to jeopardize a trial. Definitely one thing that we're going to have to look at. I mean, there's a lot of scaling back, trying to make sure that we're reducing the numbers in prisons, especially for nonviolent crimes. But we have to be careful that by reducing the numbers of people in prisons doesn't go into some of the violent acts and put violent criminals back on the streets. So that's one thing that we've got to be careful about, and we're going to have conversations about going forward.
Is there an idea how much of this violence could possibly be attributed to hybrid gangs? Do you know which ones might be most responsible, and what are the challenges to dealing with these alliances that are sort of more decentralized now?
I don't think that's really something I can strongly comment about yet. You know what? Sometimes when people see crimes and situations develop between different hybrid gangs and different gangs, sometimes, in my opinion, it's attributed too much to the name of the gangs involved or something, where it's people involved with those different groups of people, but still the core instance that caused the violence is something just occurring between people. Like it could be, say, a fight amongst people about a girl. It can sometimes come down to that basic type of thing that doesn't necessarily have as much to do with that. So it's a more complicated question than necessarily there is an easy answer.
Now, in 2017 or 2018, the community had reacted to the opioid crisis with a full-throated response. There was a McLean County Opioid Initiative, the Safe Passage Program. There were several panel discussions, including law enforcement, prosecutors, the coroner. It seems that the spike in gun violence hasn't quite sparked the same response. There were a few vigils, and that was largely it. What do you make of that contrast?
I don't agree with that summation. Police departments looked towards community partners. There were several events where community partners, social service agencies, all looked at what services they have available. There was quite discussions publicly and behind scenes about the issue. So I wouldn't say that that's fairly characterized at all.
What role do community-sponsored programs for youth play in helping to combat the problem, do you feel?
Well, the more the better. Anything to keep young kids focused and understanding that they have a future. I think where we run into problems is when we have kids believing that they don't have a future, that they don't have to worry about what happens because they don't feel anything's good's going to ever come for them. So why make good decisions towards your future if all you're worried about is the now? So that's where those type of agencies and programs help.
Is that hard to get kids to participate in that, to see the big picture?
Yes, absolutely.
As we continue with Bloomington Police Chief Clay Wheeler, shifting back to drugs, if I may, McLean County had a sizable drop in overdose deaths last year after there was a record high number in 2017. Have you seen a difference at all in the drug trade on the streets in the last year?
I don't believe so. I think there's also probably been a record amount of Narcan saves, so that might have something to do with some of the reductions in deaths.
Is it education more that's helping, that we're more aware of the dangers that has led to this drop, or is it too early to say?
Probably a combination of all those things. Definitely maybe some enforcement has helped in some areas. Education has probably helped in some areas. Like I said, like Narcan having positive effects for reducing some of the deaths. All that's a combination.
And from what we gathered from the coroner, the spike at the time was largely attributed to fentanyl being mixed with heroin and causing reactions that were so powerful they led to overdose reactions for first-time users. Could it be now that the suppliers are making adjustments based on that knowledge, so they basically are not killing off their customer base like they have been?
It could be. That could be part of it as well.
As we continue with Bloomington Police Chief Clay Wheeler, as we shift to another drug that's been sort of marginally decriminalized in the last couple of years, could become legal soon. The new governor, J.B. Pritzker, has advocated for allowing marijuana for recreational use, and it appears he has the support of the state legislature, could make that happen this year. Some supporters have said that this would give police more time to focus on more serious crimes. Would you be better able to go after harder drugs under the circumstance, or could this lead to an increase in harder drug use?
That argument doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because marijuana is not something that we spend a great deal of time on anyway. I mean, we already had that focus of going towards opioids or cocaine because of crack epidemic that was so prevalent for years. Yeah, do we spend some time on some cases occasionally? Yes, for good reason, though, because a lot of our cannabis cases arise out of a great deal of violence. Because of the money behind that trade, a lot of times it has outpaced some of the other drug trade for the amount of violence that comes with it.
When we spoke with the state's attorney about this a short time ago, Don Knapp, he said he was concerned that since marijuana became a citation a couple of years ago rather than being a criminal offense, that there have likely been fewer traffic stops. Sometimes those traffic stops produce guns and other weapons, so there may be fewer of those now. Is that a concern, that sort of the rules of engagement are maybe a little different now, that simply smelling marijuana may not be enough?
Well, it will be some of those things. May change. Right now it does offer probable cause for an officer to search a vehicle if he smells burnt cannabis in the vehicle. Sometimes that does lead to other things, like maybe identifying somebody in the car that's warrant for a violent warrant, or a gun in the car, or other kinds of drugs as well, cannabis and so forth. So that will change some things, but we'll adapt and we'll keep doing what we do. And we'll get there.
And are you concerned about the potential for more DUIs from, say, empty nesters and others who maybe have never tried marijuana, but they might be inclined to try it now and get on the road, perhaps not aware of the effects, or their body isn't prepared for the effects?
I'm not sure about the empty nest aspect of it, but I am concerned about the DUIs because there's not currently as effective field sobriety and even more importantly testing to find out exactly what level and everything involved is to be able to do that in a timely fashion, and better for you to identify as well to be able to get impaired drivers off the roadway. If you look at the places where the legalization has occurred, their fatal accidents and their impaired driving accidents have skyrocketed.
As we continue on Sound Ideas, I'm Eric Stock with Bloomington Police Chief Clay Wheeler. There have been a lot of recent changes in the police department with the administration, some retirements, of course, you coming on board as chief, and there's been your usual turnover. Where are you at? Where are you in terms of staffing levels on the street and having the experience that you need on the street?
We're about four officers down right now. We have several in training. So the reality of the boots on the ground, so to speak, of the officers on the street is a little heavier than four down. Part of that came from hiring freezes that we went through during budgetary times and so forth, trying to recover from that. So staffing levels are, I would say the thing about our staffing levels is we've, at the Bloomington Police Department, through all these years of budgetary issues that I'm sure you've followed and covered, we have tried to help with that budgetary problem as much as we can by trying to make sure that we're allocating enough officers on the street to be able to properly enforce the laws and safeguard our public. We don't have any extra. And that's going to start catching up with us as the city grows, as the demands on the officers grows. We're going to be feeling the need for some more officers and really the necessity for us to have enough to do anything extra. As we talk about trying to go in the community and do community engagement and that type of thing, it gets harder and harder to do that when you only have enough officers for answering calls for service.
Is it too much to ask with everything that they already have on their plate, handling the law enforcement aspect of it to, as you said, be sort of a social worker as well?
It's a lot to ask. It's what's been asked of us for centuries. It's never going to stop. My point, though, is as funding has eroded from the social service, from the mental health services, more and more then is put upon us. More and more is asked upon us. More and more of our time is spent on those type of issues. And I definitely think that it's important that we properly fund those as well.
Bloomington Police Chief Clay Wheeler spoke with GLT's Eric Stock. Wheeler adds the department doesn't have any new details about the city's only fatal shooting from last year that remains unsolved. Trevante Kirkwood, who was gunned down in the 1300 block of North Oak Street last November. Police say at the time they did not believe the shooting was a random act.